Boker Tov. Okay, so you did some homework on Abaye. What do you have to tell us about Abaye?
He was an orphan at a very young age, and his name means little grandfather, and he was really raised by his grandfather. And
his uncle. Not his grandfather, his uncle.
He was adopted by his uncle, Rabbi Bar Nachman. He was named after his grandfather.
Right.
Right, and Abaye means, I said, little grandfather, little father. And he learned with Rabbi Yosef and with Rabbi. And
Rabbi is Rabbi Bar Nachmani.
Oh, is that his name?
It's the same, yeah.
The same one?
Yeah.
Anyway, and Rabbi Yosef lost his uncle memory. It was the first known case of Alzheimer's in history. And Abaye kept saying things, and Rabbi Yosef said, "Where'd you hear that?" And he'd say, "From you." And that's all I learned. And, there's a story we learned, I think it was in either the Sagama Brachos, where it comes out at a very, very young age, he and Rava and Abaye, right, they went outside, and I remember, we went to the story together, do you remember? And they said, "God, you guys are really bright."
That was in this barrack here.
Oh, it was in this barrack?
Yep.
I forget where it was.
Okay, so let's get a quick overview. Abaye, when his mother was pregnant, his father died. When his mother gave birth, his mother died.
Abaye.
He was born an orphan. His uncle Rabba, who is otherwise known as Rabba Bar Nachmani, adopted him. He was named Nachmani, after the grandfather, they say. I have a theory, but I'm not sure. Why wasn't he called after his father if his father was dead? So Rabba didn't want to call his own adopted nephew his father's name. So he called him Abaye, which means my father. Abaye is also the acronym Asher Becha Yerucham Yatom. An orphan gets Asher Becha Yerucham Yatom. You comfort the orphan. Abaye was an orphan from a very young age. We find in the Gemara in Kiddushin that an orphan came and asked Abaye, "If my father asks me and my mother asks me, who do I serve first?" And Abaye looked at him and says, "You don't have a father and a mother." Abaye could tell because he knew what it was like to be an orphan. So when the orphan came and asked Abaye the Shaila, he was a nudnik. He said, "Who do I do this? Who do I that?" And finally Abaye said, "You're just like me." Abaye was able to tell that the kid was being a nudnik, but really he had not a father nor a mother.
What year was Abaye?
Abaye and Rava, if we have a Seder of the generations, so they're the disciples of Rav Yosef and Rabba, and Rava marries Rav Chista's daughter. Abaye and Rava are both Kohanim, and they're both descendants of Eli HaKohen. Abaye and Rava. Okay, so we have a quick overview of Abaye and Rava. We have two concepts in Halacha. One concept is Ein Halacha Ke Talmid Bimkom Rabo. If a student argues on his Rebbe, the Rebbe wins. Then we have a concept, Halacha Ke Basroi. Halacha is like the latter opinion. How do we reconcile those two? We will grapple with that question as we continue in our learning. Sometimes we say Halacha Ke Basroi. Halacha is like the latter opinion. Sometimes we say an Halacha Ke Talmid Bimkom Rav. If the Talmud is arguing on his Rebbe, Rebbe wins. His Rebbe wins over the Talmud. Some say that the defining line between these two concepts is Abaye and Rava. Some Rishonim hold that the concept of Halacha Kibasroi is only from the generation of Abaye and Rava and onward. Until that generation, we have the concept in Halacha Ketalmid Bimkom Rabo. When the disciple argues on the Rebbe wins. However, from the generation of Abaye and Rava onward, Halacha Kibasroi, we go like the latter opinion. So, why is the Halacha like the latter opinion? Did we discuss the Mashal of the Bach? Yes? No?
The guy standing on his shoulders?
Right, exactly. The kid is sitting on his father's shoulders, right? So if the kid is walking holding his father's hands, they walk between two cars, the kid's about to step in front of a car, the father holds him back. Zoom, car whisks by. The kid goes, "How'd you know that?" His father says, "I'm taller, I can see beyond the cars." Next, the kid is riding on his father's shoulders, and they're walking next to a van, and his father's about to step in front of the car, and the kid goes, "Abba, stop!" So he stops, and a car whisks by, and his father goes, "How'd you see that?" And he goes, "Because I'm on your shoulders." So that's the mashal of the midget on the shoulders of a giant. that the Rishonim are giants. The Achronim are midgets. However, the Achronim are sitting on the giant's shoulders. Why do we say the Halacha is like the Basroi, the latter generations? Not because they're bigger, but simply because they're sitting on the shoulders of their predecessors. So Halacha ke Basroi is because of that. So this goes into a concept that the She'iltos de Rav Achai Gaon spells out. There was a Gaon named Rav Achai. There are two opinions in Tosus and Yevamos and Ksubos and Chulin and all other places. Whether when we see in the Shas Parich Rav Achai, is that Rav Achai Gaon? Rav Achai Gaon tells us the following concept, which is basically ruled in Halacha. We know that if two Chachamim have an argument, who's the Halacha like? Well, Doraisa, Safik Doraisa, the Chumra, Safik Rabbanan, the Kula. If one of them's bigger, then he wins. We have all kinds of rules, Ayupaskan, when two Chachamim argue. What happens if two doctors argue? One doctor says it's pikuach nefesh, feed the guy in Yom Kippur. The other doctor says it's not pikuach nefesh, no problem, let him fast on Yom Kippur. Safik pikuach nefesh lekula. What happens if you have 99 doctors that say you don't have to be mechallel Shabbos on this guy, you don't have to feed him on Yom Kippur, everything's fine. And one doctor says, no, you better feed him. So when do we go by the majority opinion? What happens if 99 rabbis say one way and one rabbi says the other way? Do the 99 rabbis always win? So the She'ilto says, depends. It depends if the 99 heard the one. If the 99 heard the one, and then they ruled against him, so 99 win. They know what they're talking about. But if the 99 did not hear the one, if there wasn't open discourse between the two sides, so you don't know, had they heard him, maybe they would have been convinced. So then the one is as powerful as the 99. That's a concept that Rav Achai Gaon writes. So far, you guys with me? This concept is critical in our understanding of the evolvement of Halacha. When we say the Halacha is like Achronim against Rishonim, that's assuming that the Achronim saw the Rishonim. You remember we discussed whether Amoraim can argue on Tanoim. So we said, our assumption when we quote a Braisa against an Amora is, had he seen that, he would have retracted his opinion. However, if I know that he saw that and he still disagreed, then I say, Halacha ke Basroi. The latter opinion wins. So again, this mashal is very important. When is the Halacha like the latter opinion when I know the latter opinion saw the earlier opinion? But if they weren't aware of that, so that's what the Gemara keeps asking. What about this Braisa? Why would the Samora say this? I have a Braisa like that. The Gemara is saying if he wasn't aware of it, so then I'm not going to go with the latter opinion. Then I'm going to assume, had he known this Braisa, he would have retracted his opinion. So far, so good.
But that only applies in the Gemara?
No.
To today?
We're going to get to today in a second.
Okay.
In 1 second. I'm saying, first let's develop the concept.
Okay.
Let's move on. Bavli Yerushalmi. The Rif at the end of the first parak of Erevin writes, the Halacha is like the Bavli against the Yerushalmi. Explains the Rif. You guys homework, you should see this Rif. Stam, you should know this. The Rif writes like this. He says, the Bavli came after the Yerushalmi, and the authors of the Bavli saw the Yerushalmi. So, if the authors of the Bavli saw the Yerushalmi, then that's why the Halacha is like the Bavli, because they were Basroi. They were the latter opinion. But we just learned the concept from the She'iltos de Rav Achai Gaon that latter opinion doesn't always win. Right? It's only if the latter opinion saw the earlier opinion. So now we shift to the Gra on the Shulchan Aruch, who writes in numerous places that it's known that Darko Shel HaRambam, the way the Rambam paskins, is like the Yerushalmi. That's what the Gra writes. The rule is Rambam paskins like Yerushalmi against Mavli. Hold your horses. 1 second. Why would Rambam paskin like Yerushalmi against Mavli? One of the suggested answers is that the Rambam held that the authors of the Bavli did not see the Yerushalmi. The idea of Halacha kebasroi, we just evolved from the midget on the giant's shoulders into Rav Achai Gaon about when do I say opposing opinions, the majority wins, into the concept of Bavli versus Yerushalmi in the Rif in Erevin. Now we go over to the Rambam in the Gra and Shulchan Aruch, that idea only works if they saw one another. But if the authors of the Bavli did not see the Yerushalmi, then I have no reason to go with the Bavli over the Yerushalmi. The whole concept of Halacha kebasroi. And with this, we've also elucidated to some degree the Kovetz Shiurim we've been discussing over the previous weeks, the idea that the Amoraim can argue on Tanoim, so then why do we bring proofs from Braisos against Amoraim? What we're saying is perhaps he didn't know this Braisa. Had he known it, we're going to assume he would have retracted his opinion. Okay, so many concepts we just learned. Now we'll evolve into what Mr. Goodman is asking nowadays. So the question becomes, the Mishnah Brura in many places, when he tries to decide what the halacha is, quotes Me'iri. Now the Me'iri we didn't have until about the Mishnah Brura's time. So many generations didn't have it. And the Mishnah Brura often says, had the poskim seen this in the Me'iri, they would have said different. And he uses that as a halachic weight. That idea that the Mishnah Brura says in numerous places.
How does he know that?
Same concept. His assumption is they thought it was an equal argument among Achronim, but the Me'iri, who's a very clear commentary, sometimes throws his weight behind one opinion. Now, the Me'iri was a Rishon. So sometimes from the Me'iri, you see a weight on an argument that the Achronim had. So the Mishnah Brura will sometimes say, you see, the Me'iri also said this way. So we're going to go with this opinion. I have a Rishon that said that. So again, that's the Mishnah Brura. So that's not agreed upon by everyone. Rav Moshe and the Chafetz Chaim, I'm unaware of them directly coming out against this policy of the Mishnah Brura. However, they did.
The Chazon Ish.
The Moshe and the Chazon Ish in different contexts, the Chazon Ish with regard to the question of how you write the letter Tzaddik, and Rav Moshe with regards to manuscripts that were found, they both were of the opinion that Rishonim that were not part of the halachic process for the last 400 years don't count. We don't say, hey, you just found this, like the Mishnah Brura says, so that throws its halachic weight here. And one explanation that I offered, based on my understanding from Rav Pesn, I didn't hear it exactly this way, is that there are two weights to the opinions of Rishonim and the Rambam. Let's take the Rambam, okay? The Frankel Rambam came out with corrections in the Rambam. Why does the Rambam have halachic weight? So one reason is because the Rambam was a gadol hador. The Rambam was a giant of Torah. So that's a tremendous halachic weight because he's such a big Talmid Chacham. So if today I would find a letter from the Rambam where the Rambam told me, don't eat kitnios on Pesach. So maybe Sfardim shouldn't eat kitnios either because the Rambam wrote it. Ah, wait. But that's only a limited halachic weight. The Rambam's halachic weight today is more than double. Because the Rambam's halachic weight is not only because of his greatness, but because the Shulchan Aruch accepted him, and Klal Yisrael accepted him. So all the things that we rule like the Rambam, they have a much greater weight than just because the Rambam's a giant in Torah. There's an added weight, the fact that Am Yisrael learned and accepted it. So now if I find a letter from the Rambam that Am Yisrael did not learn and accept, for whatever reason, we didn't have it. We didn't have the manuscript. So it's a far diminished weight. According to Rav Moshe and the Chazon Ish, we don't even factor it in. According to the Mishnah Brura, we do. Now again, I am unaware of Rav Moshe or the Chazon Ish saying that they're going against this Mishnah Brura. I am aware that the Chazon Ish in certain letters regarding how you write the letter Tzadi certainly gives that impression, that he's not willing to factor in new manuscripts that were found. And Rav Moshe in other areas also seems to say that. And so that's why I'm saying it seems like these are two approaches. I unless you know that the two, that Rav Moshe and the Chazon Ish meant to disagree with the Mishnah Brura, I'm not sure, because even the Mishnah Brura doesn't use that as his main source. He says, when I have two accepted opinions in halacha, I can throw the weight of the Me'iri. Would Rav Moshe and the Chazon Ish agree to use that as an added weight or not? I think not, but unless I have a clear source that way, I'm not 100%.
What is the Sfara of Rav Moshe? In other words, you find a manuscript from the Rambam and it has the Tzadi written in a certain way.
Fine.
So, isn't that clear then that there is a source to write the Tzadi this way, or whatever the...
Yeah, the only question is what halachic weight it has. I would add other points that the Chazon Ish writes, but let's, I'm going to go your way. Let's assume like you. There are reasons why I wouldn't, but let's assume like you. Let's go all the way like you. Let's assume, I know it's Rambam, I know Rambam held this way. Well, what halachic weight does it have? It has the halachic weight of a big Rishon that was not a part of halacha for the last 500 years. Okay. So who says I should incorporate it today into my calculations?
A new Rambam or any Rambam?
If you find something from the Rambam that for 500 years Klal Yisrael didn't know existed. So, okay. We have that. What if? We have places where the Ravid was the Gadol HaDor in the days of the Rambam, where the Ravid, half the Ravid was missing. The Kesef Mishnah, Rav Yosef Karo, didn't have the full text of the Ravid that we have today. There are places where the Kesef Mishnah bashes the Ravid because he was missing certain sentences in the Ravid. We have the full Ravid.
So if we knew that the Rambam existed and he held, and we would follow him, B'halacha. But if we didn't know that it existed, then it came to light, even though it's the same.
It's the same Rambam, but it's a different weight. That's what I'm saying. The major weight of the Rambam is not only because the Rambam was such a giant in Torah. Okay. There were Baalei HaTosas, there was Rif, there was Rush, there were big Talmidei Chachamim in our Historia. So Rambam's huge. Don't get me wrong. Most of the Shulchan Aruch is Rambam. However, that's where Shulchan Aruch accepted him, Rambam accepted him, Tur accepted him. Also, now it's not only Rambam. What's the power of the Shas? That Klal Yisrael accepted it. It's not just because Ravina and Ravashi were Gdolei Ador. We're still going to discuss that. The weight, the halachic weight of the Shas. Why is the Shas binding? Tosfos seems to say it's because they were Basroi. And we don't seem to go like Tosfos. The Ran and the Rambam, they don't go like Tosfos. They say it's the Geder of Sanhedrin Agadol. Am Yisrael accepted the Shas. That's it. It's not because of Basroi.
Okay, so going with the fact that Am Yisrael accepted the Shas, a lot of times you'll see, you know, you read the Talmud and something, and the basic assumption is that the halacha is one way. Then you look at the Rishonim, you've got two Rishonim saying, no, the halacha isn't A, it's B and C. So to say that Am Yisrael accepted Shas in terms of halachic weight, the outcome of it all isn't, so what that Am Yisrael accepted it? Because the bottom line halacha is nothing like what we find in the Shas.
Let's wait. That's what we're studying now. Let's give ourselves another half a year to learn the systems of the Shas, and then let's see if you still see it that way. We're just starting, right? So, yes.
So, in the sizes, so when they found this writing, the Gaonim, that you use the size of the generation you're in, that's the basis on which the Chazon Ish says we can ignore that sentence. And therefore, he holds by the Nota Yehuda. And even though the Gaonim obviously predate the.
It's a long answer. No. I wouldn't say what you're saying. I was debating whether we should go into that sugiyah now. Because we're here. We're on Kazayas and Gemitz. You did it with Rav Rabinovich.
We saw an article. He gave us an article on that in fact the sizes haven't changed from the days of the Romans. This was, of course, not very popular in certain circles.
Right. Yeah, but if you want to learn it, then we have to take a week or two to learn it. So you decide. I believe we should first finish what we're in the middle of, and then we'll decide if we want to go off on that tangent, because there's a lot we still have to see that precedes that. I was debating with myself whether we should take a week or two to study the source material on that. So, we'll see. Let's begin with Tosus. We'll go into the Rashba, and then we will still see. So, we had seen in the Gemara, we had seen the Mishnah that if someone left Yerushalayim and he has holy meat, So when he passes Tzofim, he doesn't have to go back. Before he passes Tzofim, he has to go back either to burn his chametz or to burn his kachim. How much is the minimum volume for him to have to go back before he reaches Tzofim? Rabbi Meir said, kebeitza. Rabbi Yehuda said, a kezayas. Says Tosfos. So the Gemara had said, first Rabbi Yochanan's opinion was switch it. Abaye said, no. Ordinarily, really, Rabbi Meir says a kebeitza is the important volume. But here, Rabbi Meir has a pasuk. Over here, v'achalta zo achila, v'savata zo shtia, v'achila. If all I have is v'achalta, so that's a kezayis. Says Tosfos, v'omerari. How much homework do you guys have so far? Not a lot, right? We said just to see the riff in Erev. So now, I suggest another homework.
So where is the riff in Erev?
I remember correctly, it's the end of the first parak of Erev. Let me, I'll look it up right now. Let's do that later. Just remind me. So the next homework is who is the Re in Tosfos? Okay? You can get the help of Wikipedia, but let's find out for next week who is the Re in Tosfos. So Rabbi Meir says V'achalta means eat, V'savata means drink. Perhaps we'll get more out of Tosfos if we see the Rashba first. So let's go out of order. Ordinarily we learn Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, and then the other Rishonim. Rav Moshe said we use all the other Rishonim to better understand Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos. That's what Rav Moshe said. Our perspective is we use everyone else to understand Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos. But I think we will have a better understanding of what Tosfos is coming to preclude and include after we see the Rashba. So let's learn the Rashba first and then come back to Tosfos. Even though he references Tosfos, but still, it'll be clear. Ad kama mezamnim. You guys have it? I gave you a brief outline of who the Rashba was on the bottom. That's from the Bar Ilan CD. Ad kezayit. Ucha de milta nakat v'adin lekol birkat hamazon belo zimun. When the Mishnah said, how much do you have to eat in order to eat to do a zimun? Urcha de milta. It just spoke about what's common. V'hu adin, but really, in fact, the same holds true. Lekol birkat hamazon. Anytime the Mishnah was really addressing the question, how much do you have to eat in order to say benching, even without zimun? Okay, we saw that already in Rashi on the Mishnah. No, we didn't. We didn't see that in Rashi and Mishnah. We saw that in Tosfos, right? Tosfos said, "Hu adin birkas hamazon." Rashi said, "It's." Rashi seemed to say it's specific for zimun. Tosfos said, like that we see here in the Rashba, "Imavar tzofim pirush Rashi zal makom hayasamuch liYerushalayim shekarui tzofim." Yeah, that's what we saw in Rashi. That's not how we understood Rashi. We noticed in Rashi that Rashi said Makom she'achol lirot Beit HaMikdash. So we said Rashi could be understood as a place from which you could see the Beit HaMikdash, not the name of a place. So here we see the Rashba understood Rashi differently than we thought to understand Rashi.
The point to Rashi is from the Hindu Yerushalayim. Here you're saying it's next to Yerushalayim.
Yeah. Well, it's for sure not in Yerushalayim because the whole conversation is out of Yerushalayim. We're talking about Kachim Kalim, so we're in Yerushalayim. So, however, when we read Rashi, I don't know if the Rashba had a different version of Rashi or he just understood Rashi differently. We read Rashi as Sofim, a place you could see. Okay, but Rashba says no. Makomaya. Now do you see how we applied Rav Kampantun when we learned Rashi? Rav Kampantun says, first you read and understand, then you read the commentary. Now you'll notice what the commentary taught you. So because we read Rashi and noticed that we understood Rashi to mean differently, when we read the Rashba's interpretation of Rashi, we noticed that, hey, the Rashba told me a chiddush in Rashi. That's not the way I would have understood Rashi. Right? So again, Pirush Rashi, Zal. Notice he doesn't say Zatzal. Makom haya samuch liYerushalayim shekarui Tzofim. There was a place next to Yerushalayim called Tzofim, a specific place. V'ikshu alav betosfot. She'im ken haya lishnot. If that were pshat in the Mishnah, then the Mishnah should have continued and said, Uchemidata lechol ruach. Now, if we take a peek in Tosfos, Tosfos tells us that this isn't Rashi over here. This is Rashi in Pesachim that says this pshat. Right? On this Mishnah in Pesachim, Rashi says this pshat. And then Tosfos asks, wait, why didn't you tell me this in each direction? And that's why Tosfos gives a different pshat. That it's not the name of a place, but rather it's Lashon Re'iyah. So there is a Marsha. We started discussing a Nachlas David last week. Nachlas David is Rav David Tevel. Rav David Tevel in his Nachlas David says the following rule. He says there are different approaches to how we learn Gemara. Tosfos' approach to learning Gemara is, if I have two sugyos, I want to rectify both sugyos that they should work together. So I will say this sugya doesn't mean exactly what you think it means, and that sugya doesn't mean exactly what you think it means. I'll do a kvetch in both sugyos and make them both come out equal. And so Tosfos says the Nachlas David, Tosfos was less concerned about whether his pshat fit into the literal meaning of the words. Tosfos was more concerned in rectifying Gemaros with one another and rectifying Gemaros with Halacha Lemaisa the way our minhag is. That is Tosfos' system when Tosfos works on Gemaros. That's what the Nachlas David writes. There's a Marsha that writes about Rashi the following. He says, when Rashi interprets two sugyos, Rashi will freely interpret the same quote in two sugyos differently. The Marsha says you cannot ask a stira, a contradiction, from Rashi in one masechet to Rashi in another masechet, because that is the way Rashi learns Shas. Rashi learns you can have conflicting sugyos. And so Rashi will say that when the Gemara quotes the same quote in two places, in one place the Gemara means this way, and in another place the Gemara means that way, and Rashi's interpretation is not identical, because Rashi isn't hard-pressed to make all the sugyos fit together the same way. Rashi is okay with saying, this Gemara argues with that Gemara, and we'll have to rule between them. There are those who suggest that the Rambam learned like Rashi, and the Rambam paskin like Rashi. That the Rambam will very often say it's a machlokas asugyos, whereas Tosfos works very hard to rectify sugyos that they all should fit together nicely. Rambam and Rashi, not. Again, about Rashi, the Marsha says it. About Rambam, much later people say it. I don't know how much credence to give their opinion. I'm just mentioning it as food for thought. Coming back to here, so our Diak and Rashi might be very accurate. If the Rashba is like Tosfos, so then what he's quoting from Rashi is not Rashi in our sugya. And then going with the concept we just said, it could be Rashi in our sugya learned like Tosfos. That's why Rashi doesn't say here what he said in Pesachim. Now let's move on with the Rashba. Im avar tzofim pirish Rashi zal makom haya samuch liYerushalayim. Do you want me to read with the Hebrew accent or English accent, or it doesn't matter? You understand just as well, or you have a preference?
You can read the words.
When you change your mind, tell me. V'ikshu alav betosvot, so Tosfos asks on Rashi, Shem kenei alishanot uchmidat alechol ruach, if so, then the Mishnah should have also said the same measurement in other directions. Uchinyan shamu b'pesach sheni, as the Gemara says in Pesach sheni. Perek Mishayatame, Eze Derechoka, the Mishnah over there in the Perek called Mishayatame. The Mishnah over there says, what's considered Derech Rechoka? So the Mishnah gives you parameters. How far can you be in order to be Chayav and Pesach Sheni? Mina Modin Velachutz, Uchemidata Lechor Ruach. The Mishnah itself says, from Modi'in to Yerushalayim is one direction. Take this same measurement in every other direction. Ela, rather, Tosfos explains, Teirush Tzofim, the meaning of the word Tzofim is She'echol Litzvot Misham et Yerushalayim, a place from which you could still see Yerushalayim. That's the parameters the Mishnah was giving you. Lefi Shekshavar Makom Riyat Yerushalayim, once a person passed the distance from which he could see Yerushalayim, lo etrichu lechzor v'lisof lifnei abira. Chazal did not burden him to come back and burden it in front of the Beit HaMikdash. Aval kol shukarov kol kach. But whoever is that close, she'adayin roet Yerushalayim, if he still sees Yerushalayim, etrichu lechzor v'lisofo lifnei abira, kedei levaisho. Chazal wanted to embarrass him. Al shelo nizar alav. He wasn't careful. What happened here? You took out holy meat from Yerushalayim. You're not paying attention. Kodshim. So they made him come back. Weiter. Hacha bikrai plige. So this is an interesting concept we just saw in the Rashba. That sometimes Chazal made a takana. It's uncomfortable. Good. It's supposed to be uncomfortable. Right? This is a very hard shaila for Rabban. It's not always our job to make life comfortable for people. Sometimes there have to be ramifications. There was a person who called me up with a shayla, and I said to them, you have to verify the reality, the metzias. And they refused. Oh, you're all married, I could tell you. There was a woman who was staining in her shivanaki. So I said to her, I think there's a high probability you're wounded. I would say, go to a nurse and find out. She refused to go to a nurse. I said to her, lady, I anticipate that you will call me back. In 2 days, you will stain again. You can choose not to go to a nurse, but I'm not sure you will come clean at all. And then she goes, so Rabbi, why can't you be makil for me and allow me X or Y or Z? So I said, maybe I could. But if you don't do your end of it, it could be I don't have to be makil. Meaning it's true that sometimes we say, diminish your bedikos, do only 1 in 7, do only 1 a day. There are answers. But who said I'm supposed to give those answers? Maybe the answer is you're wounded, and then I don't have to be makil. She said, why can't I just wear black clothing and not see what comes out, and then I won't know that I'm bleeding? I said, no, we don't do that. She said, you never do that? There are no such things that you can do that? I said, there are dire circumstances where we consider for dire circumstances, dire answers. But first you have to do yours. She refused to do hers, and lo and behold, 2 days later, new Shaila, she's staining all over again. Okay, what am I supposed to do? Sometimes the halacha says, don't budge. The halachic range doesn't always say, okay, now just they won't do theirs, but you do yours. You give them something which is a huge bidyeved. No. So coming back here, the Chazal said the guy should go back and burn it. And the guy is going to say, but it's not comfortable to come back with my whole family in front of everyone. And Chazal say, right. We wanted you to be uncomfortable. It's not supposed to be comfortable to make such a mistake. To forget that you have kachim with you, Chazal wanted the person to be uncomfortable, so it shouldn't happen again.
But not that uncomfortable if you walk further than...
Right.
Uh-huh.
That's the range. Atkan. Right. Yeah. There's a concept that sometimes there has to be a certain consequence. Yeah. Yeah, that's coming back to here.
It's the same rule that they have with the Atzilut, that they didn't want the Kohanim to be lazy.
Right. Right. Chazal were teaching us a balance as an approach. It's not always supposed to be comfortable. Hacha bekrai plige. So the Gemara says, the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Chachamim revolves around psukim. Rabbi Meir savar v'achalta v'savata. Rabbi Meir Savar, that's a word one day we'll have to speak about, that the words v'achalta v'savata v'achalta zo achila v'savata zo shtia v'achila b'kezait. Okay, we know the term achila is always eating a kezais b'chtei achilas pras. Rabbi Yehuda Savar v'achalta v'savata achila sheyesh basviya. When the Torah said you will eat and be satiated and blessed, so the Torah was teaching you eat the volume which gives you satiation. Hevei omer, I would say, I should say, kibetza, the volume necessary is the volume of an egg. Mikan nireh, from here it seems, dekezait l'Rabbi Meir v'kabetza l'Rabbi Yehuda hu deoraita, that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing on a doraisa level. Deha bekrai plige, their argument sounds like an argument revolving around how to darshan a pasuk, so then that would sound like it's a machlokas midoraisa. V'rav Avir adamar b'perek mi shemeto dekezait v'kebeitza midrabanan. Rav Avir says in the earlier chapter, the third chapter, he says that the Ribbono Shel Olam says, I love my yidden because they venge even over a kezayis, even over a kebeitza. So he's saying over there, that's a drabanan. I thought that would reduce the noise a bit more. So he holds eat like Rabbi Yochanan. You're right. He doesn't darshan like Abaye. He holds like Rabbi Yochanan. Da'amar muchlefet ashita. Rabbi Yochanan said, just switch their opinions. Umihu, however, anan ke Abaye sviralan. We hold like Abaye de Basrahu. Remember what we began with today? Abaye is the latter opinion. So we rule like Abaye against Rav Yochanan, even though Rav Yochanan is a powerhouse. Remember we said last week, Rav Yochanan outweighs Rav, Rav Yochanan outweighs Shmuel, even though Rav and Shmuel have tremendous halachic weight, the halachas like Rav and Esurim, like Shmuel in monetary matters, Rav Yochanan overpowers both of them, and Abaye overpowers Rav Yochanan. I'm referring you back to what we began with today. The Yeshmi Shepiresh, there are those who explain, Rav Pesen Zatzal said he has a Masorah from the Chafetz Chaim, that when the Meiri uses terminology about Chachamim, so whenever the Meiri quotes a Chacham, the Meiri gives laudatory terms. He says, HaChacham HaGadol, HaChacham HaShalem, HaChacham HaNifla, that the Chafetz Chaim was medayik each term that the Meiri used, and he said it was a halachic weight that the Meiri was giving the different chachamim when he used different terminology. And I noticed that Rav Yosef Karo has a specific term he uses for the Ma'ari Abu Hav. For other commentaries, he just quotes them. And when he quotes the Ma'ari Abu Hav, he always calls him Rabbeinu HaGadol, our big Rebbe, the Ma'ari Abu Hav. And I've always wondered, is it because Rav Yosef Karo really held the Ma'ari Abu Hav was so big? Or the Ma'ari Abu Hav had political weight at the time? Or the Ma'ari Abu Hav wrote a commentary on the tour that preceded the Beis Yosef's commentary? So being that the Beis Yosef really usurped the Ma'ari Abu Hav, maybe that's why it was important to the Beis Yosef to show him due honor. That people shouldn't feel like, what I say counts, and the Ma'ari Abu Hav, forget about him. He's the old commentary on the tour. Perhaps that's why whenever the Beis Yosef quotes the Ma'ari Abu Hav, and most often he does not agree with him, he always gives him that credence. Rabbeinu HaGadol, he also gives him that kavod. So I always thought that third opinion, that's my opinion. I don't have proof of it, but I noticed that the Beis Yosef doesn't use that term for anyone else. The Rashba doesn't get a title, Rabbeinu HaGadol. No one else that I remember gets that title in the Beis Yosef. So that's my guess, that maybe something like that was behind what the Beis Yosef did. Coming back to the Rashba. So when the Rashba quotes an opinion, and he just says, Yesh mi shepiresh, going back to what Rav Pesen Zatzal said in the Chafetz Chaim, he's not given so much weight. It's someone worth quoting, but he's not telling us who. Someone says this. Dehacha asmachta be'almau. that over here, even though the Rashba began by saying it sounds like it's a Doraisa, and then the Rashba said, okay, so we don't rule like that opinion. But there is an interpretation that says that over here, it is only an Asmachta. V'le'olam, because in truth, mideoraita, biblically, sivya gemura be'inan. In order for you to be biblically obligated to bench, you must really be satiated. That's a second shot. So the first shot was that according to Abaye, it's all Doraisa, and we just don't rule like Abaye. We do rule like Abaye. I'm sorry, Rav Avira didn't go like Abaye, but we would go like Abaye. And then Yesh Mi Shepiresh, that really midoraisa, you're not chayv and benching until you are satiated. So there's a big nafkamina between these two pshatim. The first pshat in the Rashba says, you ate a kezayis, you're chayv midoraisa. Okay, a kebetza, machlokas, whether it's a kezayis or a kebetza. But you're chayv midoraisa, if you're not sure if you benched, go back and bench. The second opinion says, no, unless you're full, you're not chayv midoraisa. The whole machlokes of Meir and Rabbi Yehuda is an asmachta. It's not on a doraisa level. It's how far Chazal made you go back. Okay? Now, again, the first opinion, the Rashba said, we paskin like Abaye. The first opinion, the Rashba, seems to be the Rashba's opinion, that we would paskin that a kezayis or a kebetza is a doraisa. And again, this has a huge nafkamina ledina. If I'm not sure if I ate a kezayis, do I have to bench or not? According to the first opinion, you have to bench, because it's a suffix doraisa. According to the second opinion, you do not. It's a suffix drabanan. You're for sure not full.
Yeah, but the bias never rules on the halacha. In other words, the according to a bias, you need shtia. According to a bias, according to Rabbi Nei, you need shtia. So if you didn't drink, then you never qualified as a diaraisa medium benching.
Perhaps.
That's not a statement of fact.
We'll see further in the Rashba. Did Abaye mean in Rabbi Meir's Shita that you require both in order to be high of benching? Or was it either?
Okay.
Eating or drinking, or eating and drinking? It's a very good point what you're making, but let's see as we go on in the Rashba. He says, even though I told you that according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's all Rabbanan, but I think, he says, it would seem that even Rabbi Yochanan agrees that a kezayis is doraisa. Rabbi Yochanan nasiv zeita uvarich lefanav elahacharav. Famous story, it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Rabbi Yochanan took a zayit. He ate an olive. Yes.
We said that the halacha would be like Abaye because he came later.
Right.
So, what are we trying to shin now, Rabbi Yochanan? What are we trying to do? We're trying to say that Rabbi Yochanan.
Right now, he's not speaking la halacha. He's discussing Rabbi Yochanan's shita. He's saying, initially, I told you that according to my first interpretation, Rabbi Yochanan holds drabanan, Abaye holds doraisa. Now I want to tell you, even Rabbi Yochanan holds its doraisa. And he quotes the following story from the Yerushalmi. Rabbi Yochanan was eating an olive. He made a bracha rishona. He made a bracha achrona. Ve'avi Rav Chiya bar Bo mistakel bei. Rav Chiya bar Abba was watching him. Amale Rabbi Yochanan, Bavla mat mistakel bi. Babylonian, what you looking at? Let lach kol shu mimin shivatun bracha lefanav lacharav. You don't hold it. You have to make a bracha before and after eating shivas aminim. Eat le. He did hold it. So why was he looking at him weirdly? Because the volume of a kezayis is the olive with the pit. Rav Yochanan obviously isn't eating the pit. The pit isn't edible. So why is he making a bracha achrona after eating his olive? What, Rav Yochanan doesn't hold that? No, Rav Yochanan agrees to that. So why was Rav Yochanan making a bracha achrona after an olive? An olive is not the volume of a kezayis, because you're not eating the pit. Rav Yochanan held that ber yashani, that if you eat something that's a complete bria, then you do have to make a bracha achrona, even if it wasn't a kezayis. And we quote this Rav Yochanan Malacha, this Rav Yochanan from the Yerushalmi. Afilu sheken afilu preda achat shel anav, even if you ate one grape. Afilu preda achat shel rimon, even if you ate one pomegranate seed. Mevarech alav, you make a bracha achrona even though you didn't need a kezayit. So he says, what do you see from here? You see that Rav Yochanan seems to hold it's all doraisa. Because Rav Yochanan asked him, you don't think I have to make a bracha before it and afterwards? It's one of the Shiva Saminim. What was he saying, Shiva Saminim? Must be, because he holds the Achalta V'Savata V'Rechta goes on the Shiva Saminim. Umihu, but if Shah, the Midrabanan come up. Maybe Rav Yochanan didn't really mean Midoraisa Shiva Saminim. Maybe really he meant Midrabanan. Why did he mention Shiva Saminim? Good question.
Something I didn't understand. One thing, they took the pit out of the olive, so therefore it's no longer a complete pit olive.
Complete means what's edible is complete.
Okay.
Your question is better than my answer. I'm answering you from what it says in the Rashba. The Beis Yosef asks your question. One day maybe we'll get to it. They admit your question is a good question. I'm just pointing out how the Rashba seemed to learn the Yerushalmi. One day, if we're going to learn the Beis Yosef, you're going to get validated. So you should just know your question's good.
What's your question? That it's no longer the size of the kezayis?
No, that it's no longer a beria. He's saying the whole concept of beria is I ate a whole thing. You didn't eat the whole thing. You didn't eat the pit. So now, why is it still a beria?
What is a beria?
A whole creation, the way it was created. So Rav Yochanan teaches us that there's a concept of kezayis that's chayiv bracha achrona, then there's the concept of something that has chashivus. So he's saying, Mr. Goodman's saying, I understand when you ate a pomegranate seed, you ate one whole creation. Fine. Because you ate the outside, the juice, the pulp, and you ate the seed that's inside. You ate a whole creation. Gotcha. But why is an olive called a whole creation? You basically peeled off, if you would peel off the olive off the pit, you wouldn't say that's whole creation. So why are you willing to look at an olive minus the pit? As one opinion says he swallowed the pit. But the way the Rashba quotes Yerushalmi, the way the Rashba is saying it is not the way the Poskim quote it. That's why I'm answering you within the Rashba. When we get to it in the Beis Yosef, or the Beis Yosef quotes this Yerushalmi, so we'll see a totally different Malach in the Yerushalmi. But say there, I'm working with you in the Rashba. That's down the road, we're not even there. I'm saying that's not our sugya, unless you guys will want to go there. We'll go there too. Saying, so coming back to here. You followed his question? He's saying, you peeled off the pit. Why is this a barrier? If I slice an apple, I eat the apple minus the seeds. It's not a beria. It's what's edible in an apple, but it's not a beria. The concept of beria is this is the way it was from creation. I ate the whole thing. You didn't eat the whole thing.
This is why a single bug is a problem, because it's a bird.
Yeah, there's a chashivos to a beria. That's what this Yerushalmi is teaching us. The Bavli doesn't quote it. And here the question is, if the Bavli didn't quote it, did the Bavli agree to it? We began today with discussing the Rif and the Rambam. Do I go with Bavli? Do I go with Yerushalmi? What do I do where the Bavli didn't mention a concept that appears in the Yerushalmi? Right. We'll get there.
But why is the Marsha bringing in this Sogila? What's he...
The Rashba says, at first glance, when Rav Yochanan says, it's Shiva Saminim, of course I have to make a bracha, it sounds like Rav Yochanan's saying, Midorais, I have to make a bracha on Shiva Saminim. He says, I could say it's Drabanan. But the idea that he said, but it's Shiva Saminim, why did he mention Shiva Saminim? If he was talking about a bracha drabanan, he should have just said, don't you make blessings on the food you eat? He didn't say that. He said, when you eat seven species, you don't hold, you have to make a bracha beforehand and afterwards? That terminology sounds like he's assuming everyone does. Why is he assuming everyone does? Because Rav Yochanan sounds like he's learning V'halta V'savato V'rechta, as we began with last week. That's a Doraisa on all Shivas Aminim. Remember, we discussed, is it Shivas Aminim or not? We're still going to see among the Rishonim two Shitos which play themselves out till today.
Yeah, but of course it's Doraisa because it's a Pasuk in the Torah. He just holds that that applies to Shivas Aminim.
Well, we Paskin, it would seem that being that the Torah delineated Shivas Aminim, and then said, Eretz Ashelov Mischinuto Chalba Lechem Lotech Sar Kolba. You remember? You had Shivas Aminim, then you had a pasuk about bread, and then you had V'achalta V'Savata V'Rechta. So we pointed out then that is V'achalta V'Savata going on bread, or is it going to Psukim back to Eretz Chita Usora?
Oh, I see.
Okay. And La Halacha, it seems like, the Mechaber rules that we only hold that bread is Midoraisa. The Chayyadam brings that we have so many Rishonim and it's not so clear, and Misafik, we treat it as a Safik.
Right, but what we're trying to determine though is Rabbi Yochanan in terms of the size of the Shiur, is it Kizayas or
right,
Kizayas or Jerubanan? By saying that this is like mixing apples and oranges, by saying that, oh, he holds that it's the right, that's the Raisa by Shiva Saminim, that doesn't apply to. And that means Rabbi Yochanan holds that the pasuk of Chalta V'Savata is Doraisa in terms of.
Great question. Great. Now give me a great answer. Reread the Rashi. Well, now you give me an answer. Very good. You're asking right. You're 100% right. Now give me an answer.